inspire you. High school and collegiate Hall of Famer Margo Hinton, touching on the importance of self-discipline, always challenging yourself, and the support of community. It's Give It Up with Margo Hinton on Urban Media Today Radio.
Welcome to the Give It Up podcast on UrbanMediaToday.com, where we still give it up for excellence, leadership, and everything else. And we use sports as a metaphor for life. We dissect social justice issues, but today we are back talking about the NBA. And as usual, we are going to spotlight somebody. It's called the Give It Up Spotlight. And before I introduce my guest, why don't we just talk about the brother that was my favorite back in the day, just a man of all men, the Dr. J, I'm talking about, making house calls all over the USA on the court. So let's talk about Dr. J, y'all. Julius Erving helped the New York Nets win the ABA championship in 1974 and 1976 before switching to the NBA and joining the Philadelphia 76ers. In 1983, he helped lead the club to a world championship. Upon retiring in 1987, he had played in more than 800 games, scoring an average of 22 points per game. In his early years, he was born on February 22, 1950, in Roosevelt, New York. Julius Erving, called Dr. J by his fans, became known for his style and grace on and off the court during his 16-year professional basketball career. He was a solid player at Roosevelt High School, where the nickname Dr. J is said to have originated. While the exact details of how he got the nickname are unclear, it's believed that a friend began calling him Erving, had dubbed him Professor. His friend dubbed him Professor, and then I believe that turned into the Doctor, Dr. J. Erving liked the name, and it stayed with him throughout his college and professional career. In 1968, Erving, who was not recruited by many big basketball programs, enrolled at the University of Massachusetts. He played just two seasons for the school his freshman year. He was eligible to play varsity, and Erving left before his senior season, but he left his mark on the program. At Massachusetts, he earned an average 32.5 points a game and 20.2 rebounds. Let me say that again, y'all. 32.5 points per game and 20.2 rebounds. Lord have mercy. One of only five players at the time to have averaged more than 20 points and 20 rebounds a game. That is none other than the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm going to say one of the greatest players that ever played there. My main man, Dr. J. Give it up for the doctor. Woo, he's back, y'all. And you know what we do. With Matt Cloak, I can't even say your name right. I'm going to say it right now. When Matt Moclair comes on the Give It Up podcast, all we do is talk about the NBA because we love it, we like it, and we always want more. Matt, before we go any further, you were running a race. I believe it was a half marathon last time we saw you. Tell us how it went. What went down? Was your time fast? Were you happy? What happened?
Yeah, Coach, it's always a pleasure to see you and join you for a night of basketball talk. You know, this is a highlight of my week. I think the last time we talked, I was in North Carolina getting ready for a half marathon. I ran really strong. It was a tough day, a lot of wind out there, but the ocean breeze didn't stop me from having fun and running really, really well to finish really at a high place. So I'm really content with it. And back to what I call the performance lab to keep working and getting stronger and faster and getting ready for the Pittsburgh half marathon in May. So
let's do it. I love it.
But you know, I think, Coach, one of the things that struck me when you were talking about Dr. J, don't you feel it refreshing whenever you watch like an NBA All-Star game or like a big game and you see like Dr. J sitting courtside or Bill Russell sitting courtside? Yes. It's almost like your grandparents are in the room or something, right? And they're like, it's like, everything is right in the world, right?
Listen, I totally agree with that. Every time I see Dominique Wilkins, Dr. J, Isaiah, even Shaq, he's not old school, but he's old school. When they're judging the dunk contest, I just get a big smile on my face. I'm like, yes, yes. And then when Bill Russell trots out the MVP trophy, during the season. Come on now. You can't get better than that.
No, you can't. And I think that that's where we start our conversation tonight. You know, the history behind those two men, what they've seen through their four eyes, what they've been able to give back to this game, and what they've been able to lay the road and the foundation with, has given us, you and I, and all our listeners, and all the people that really cherish the bounce of the ball, the cheering of the crowd, the way the sneakers squeak against the floor, mm-hmm. the way that, you know, the shot hits the back portion of that rim and goes straight down, right? That's what gives us that ever present love of the game. And I think it always starts at a young age, right, Coach?
Let's talk about that, y'all, because what we're going to talk about is throwback NBA. Today is the throwback day. So since you started on that, we're going to talk about starting at a young age. We're going to talk about your earliest basketball memories. But before we do that, what I want you to do is tell everybody, who are you tributing on this throwback NBA day? Who are you rocking with today? Who's your jersey?
I think you and I have come to a good collection tonight. I think what you have going on is sort of like the past mm-hmm. and the present. And I'd even probably say the future, because this, I mean, MJ is like, I mean, he's transcending, right? I mean, it doesn't matter what era you're in. And I have sort of who wanted to be like Mike. So I got the throwback, Kobe 8, back in the day, Kobe 8. And that was my era. That was my year, 96, when he came out. That's when I graduated high school. That's we were one game away at Schenley from playing Lower Merion in the state finals. But we lost to Erie Prep in the semis at Grove City. I'll never forget it. We went up there and we thought we were going to blow this team out. And it was the complete opposite. We ran through more picks with those country boys. More picks, more bruises. I mean, we had a star-studded team with Nairon Jackson and Brian Carroll and Rashawn Butte and Fife. And we had all these cats that were just some really high caliber players that went on to play at a pretty high level. But we just couldn't compete with that team at the time. And we couldn't compete with the mindset to keep our composures in dealing with refs outside of the city league. But I think that's all the love of the game. That's what just happens, right? And I think that through those years growing up in the city, the same way you did, we gained an appreciation for basketball that I wouldn't change it for improper language. Kristen, don't listen. Nothing. I wouldn't change it for nothing, Coach.
Listen, I love what you're saying, because I know what you mean when you go and have referee, and I'm a referee, so this is no dissing to referees.
None.
When you go outside of the familiar confines of a city league court, and you know how you've been playing, and you get outside the city, I won't mention no names. I've mentioned this name of a school previously, and it's a different whistle. It's a different whistle. At least it was in the 80s. This is no shade to the referees, because that's my community. But it was a different era, and it was a different whistle that you definitely had to be prepared for. And if you weren't, it was going to be a long game. But let me talk about my outfit too.
Go ahead, girl.
You already alluded to it. I'm rocking with none other than Be Like Mike, MJ. That's right, the Bulls of the 80s and the 90s. Michael Jordan's team. I got on the championship NBA Finals jersey, and I'm rocking with the Chicago Chi-Town. I guess we call this like a little winter hat. That's what I'm rocking with right now. So going back to something you said, now you started talking about some of your later memories on the Schenley High School team. Tell me your earliest memory of basketball. When did it get into your soul, into your spirit? When did you say, this is my game? When did you get the love of the game? How was that seed planted in you?
Yeah, you know what? I think it was one of those things where it was a two kind of prong. I played youth football, and I'll never forget that I played for the Westview Chiefs. And at the time, LeVar Arrington, you know that name. LeVar Arrington played on that team. And
listen, I got a LeVar Arrington story. I won't even tell it now, but yes.
We all do. And during one of the practices, he hit one of these kids so hard that the kid actually left his uniform as it stood straight up in the field, and the kid's body actually moved like a ghost outside as LeVar removed it from the uniform. And I told my mom and dad, I was like, you know what? I think I'm done. I think I'm going to play basketball now.
That was it.
Yeah, I was good with it. And so the moons aligned, and my best friends to this day, his name was Rasan Butte. He moved in from Chicago, and he moved down the street from me. And I was, and bear with me, coach. He was the black version of me, and I was the white version of him. And I hope that doesn't take any coolness away from him, because I'm way overrated. Trust me.
Nah, I love it. I love this analogy. I love this.
Yeah. So we became wherever he was, I was. Whatever he was doing, I was doing. And we played basketball in middle school, in high school together, and outside of high school into college. And we worked, and I think we both taught each other the love of the game. He had it before I did, coming from Chicago. But we really went through a lot on the court. We went through a lot with basketball. We were very competitive. And those were the really early days that really established my love for this game. That round ball with those lines on it, with those dimples on it. We studied that ball to the nth degree. The form, everything that went into basketball, we were immersed in it, coach.
That's amazing. That's a great story.
Yeah. How about you?
All right. So we moved from the Hill District, and I used to live, and if you listen to the podcast, I probably said this before, I grew up in a house with my mother, with my grandmother, and with my aunt Linda, rest in peace, originally. And then my aunt Linda had my cousin Larry. So then it was all of us in the house. And so my cousin Larry's dad is none other than the Larry Harris, former all-time leading scorer at the University of Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yeah. So St. Lawrence II is his son, which is my first cousin. And so when my Aunt Linda was with Larry, they would take me to the basketball games at Pitt at the field house.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah, so in between running around the track at the field house, I would sit and watch the game a little bit. And he'd bring the ball over to the house, and I'd spin it, and he was trying to teach me how to spin it on my finger. And at a young age, I could spin that ball on my finger. I was like five or six years old around this time. And let me see. Larry was born, we're 8 years apart. So I had to be around 8 years old. I'm gonna say I was around 8 years old.
Okay.
And so I got the bug there. And then my cousin Lance, rest in peace as well. He was a hooper down at Warrington Recreation Center. And so when we would play, he would be like, I got my cousin Margo. As I got older, he'd be like, I got my cousin Margo first. He would pick me first. And so I got like a little rep as the only female playing with all these, we called them old heads back in the day, where they were swooping with jeans and boots on, some of them. Oh, and I played with the guys all the time. And it was just like a great time. That's how I got sort of indoctrinated in the hoops. And it's never left me since. Now we're up against our first break. We're going to take our first commercial break, and we will be right back. This is the Give It Up podcast with my main man, Matt Moclair, partner in power. Shout out to Karen Hunter. We'll be right back.
Did you know untreated chlamydia and gonorrhea can make it so that you or your partner might not be able to become pregnant? Get tested today. Visit Allegheny County Health Department's Public Health Clinic for free and confidential walk-in HIV STD screenings at the Hill District location, 1908 Wiley Avenue. Call 412-578-8081 for more information.
Welcome back to the Give It Up podcast on UrbanMediaToday.com. Yes, me and Matt breaking down the NBA. We're going to do some throwback talk today. So we talked a little bit about your game. What I want to know now is, who did you pattern your game after? Who was that NBA player or college player, or maybe somebody in your neighborhood where you were like, that's my dude, I'm trying to do that move that they do? Who was it?
Yeah, you know what, coach, and it's so funny because in the beginning of this podcast, like before I got on, I didn't feel like the energy, right? I didn't feel, you know, it's a long day. You know, I had a bunch of runs and I just didn't feel that kind of energy. But when we start talking about this, the history behind what our love is for the game, I think it boils up this emotion that brings back so many great times and so many great memories. I mean, I think one of the things that has really established me and my fame for basketball, when we take it back, is Slam Magazine. I mean, up in my attic, coach, I have every single issue of Slam Magazine up until about 5 years ago, where I was like, you know what? This collection is getting a little bit ridiculous.
I'm coming over. That's all I got to say.
A little bit ridiculous.
And you should know who's on it. The Allen Iverson Slam with the Afro.
Let's go. Now, I couldn't bring out my first because my first edition with Larry Johnson is in a case. But I did bring out the second ever issue, which is Sean Kemp, issue number 2.
Big fan.
Slam. Now, coach, I was so ingrained with basketball back in the day because of Slam Magazine. I remember at one point in my early years in high school, it was like my first girlfriend in high school. And I tell Kristen this too. The new Slam Magazine at whatever time that was came out. And we were down at the original hot dog shop, a bunch of my boys and this girl was there with me. And
in Oakland, y'all, we got to give you some background on the O, called the O, right. The Dirty O in Oakland, closed during the pandemic, which is very sad. Because that was everybody's late night spot, including the Hoopers, like my man Matt. Go ahead, Matt. My fault.
And when the small fry equals a large fry and the medium fry equals an extra large fry and so forth and so on. Remember those?
Absolutely.
So I said to this girl, I said, "Ooh, this new Slam Magazine came out. This is tight. This is, you know, it has all the new like street ball stories and all the players in this." And she looked at me and she said, "What is Slam?" That was the last time that I think I spoke to her. Because we broke up after that because she didn't know what Slam Magazine was. Because Slam Magazine was such an integral part of my youth. And I go back and I look in these magazines still to this day sometimes. And it brings me back to really understanding what I did. And I was a shooter back in the day. I was so passionate and I mimicked my game after a basketball player. His name was Bobby Sura. He was from a PA school. He played at Florida State University with Charlie Ward. And he was this cocky, went on to play for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I have his jersey upstairs. He went on and I would videotape the Duke Florida State games with him and Charlie Ward. And he would come down and he would cross some dude over and one hand kind of pike through the lane. Bobby Sura was my man. So it wasn't like Tim Hardaway or Penny or, you know, any of these cats. It was Bobby Sura. But you know why I knew about him? Because of Slam Magazine. It was the voice of basketball back in the day, coach.
Shout out to Slam, y'all. Let me see if I got a. I don't know. I was thinking about this myself. I came up with the question and then I was like, wait, who did I pattern my game after? I will say this. My Aunt Linda, Larry's mom, my cousin Larry's mom, she was a big 76ers fan and she was in love with Mo Cheeks. Mo Cheeks back in the day. And so she really introduced me to watching games and watching the NBA. And because she loved Mo Cheeks, I took Mo Cheeks' number when I got to high school. I'm like, give me number 10. And then I think one year I might have had Jordan's number. I was 22 and 23 in college. But I don't know if I necessarily patterned my game, like what I was doing on the court. I think what I tried to do is just become like the best ball handler there could ever be. So I would see moves from various people. So if this person had a bomb crossover, I would try to cross over. If somebody had like a hesitation, I would do this. But there was, and I can't remember the name of the coach. There was a coach in college who messed me up and elevated my game at the same time. He was the boys basketball coach at the time at IUP in 1985. Okay. And so he showed me this one hesitation move. And what happened was, why I say it's the, it was the best and worst thing that happened to me. Once he showed me this move, it worked so well that I never tried to do anything else.
That was your go-to.
It worked. So I was like, boom, boom. I would get past people at will. And then I sort of evolved after college. And so that this move was on the right-hand side of the court. And then I evolved the move on the left-hand side of the court to the point where, if you know anybody's ever watched me, they call it the Margo. Oh, she got you with the go. And my nickname's Go. They'd be like, she got you with the go. It's on the left-hand side of the court. You got to stay tuned for my training program and I'll get you with the go. But it's like the move that Michael Jordan had on the baseline where he's driving down the left-hand side of the baseline and then he acts like he's going back out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then he comes right back. Steve Smith did it. Michael Jordan did it. And Margo Hinton does it. I'm just trying to say that was the go in the Margo move. And so I guess you could say a little bit of Michael Jordan right there, but I just stole from everybody. And that's what I tell the girls that I work with now or the kids that I work with now. Steal from everybody's game. Watch basketball.
That's right.
If you want to get good, watch the game.
So, Coach, let me ask you this. So, with you saying that you took Michael as a whole, and you broke down parts of his game that you wanted to take with you. You didn't necessarily take everything because that's a lot to handle right there. But let's talk about what Michael meant to us, you know, as a player, as somebody back in the day that was such an iconic and such a big figure and held such a spotlight for us. Because you're wearing the jersey and because, you know, you just mentioned him, what did Michael mean to you? And you can get real surface with this, but I wanted to go deeper in terms of that emotion. You know, like what emphasis did you put on Michael Jordan in your life?
So this is wild that you say that because, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you wouldn't even know I was a Michael Jordan fan back in the day. You would think I was all LeBron. And that was it. But you do have to remember, I'm 54 years old. So my era of basketball is Michael Jordan. We sort of like grew up together, right? And when I didn't start really following Michael Jordan until after he left college. To be honest, I was not a North Carolina fan when he was in college. So I couldn't root for him then. I was a major NC State Jim Valvano fan. Derek Wittenberg, nice. Sidney Lowe. I'm just saying I was all about that. Yes, that was my team. But when Mike got to the Bulls, Lord have mercy. I was so into his game. Just like I am with LeBron, to be honest, if anybody tried to say anything about Michael Jordan, I was ready to fight. And I've never fought in my life. Like the passion, the swagger, the style, the intensity, the confidence, the passion, the everything that he put into seemed like everything that he did on the court just to me was inspiring and meant that, you know, if I worked hard, I could be like Mike. And that's what I was trying to do.
That's a great point. In your world, right? Be like Mike, like Margo.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that's really important for everybody to know is, you know, whatever you, whoever you really idolize, having it come back to being relative to who you are as Margo, as Matt, as, you know, our parents, as, you know, like everybody has an idol. Everybody has somebody they look up to. And I think that's really great. And, you know, for Michael Jordan to be such a prominent figure in our life early on, you know, one of the things that I really took from The Last Dance was that how much of a huge chunk of time and energy and focus we had in watching them. I remember tuning into WGN at night and sitting in my kitchen with, like, on the phone with my friends, you know, like the landline, and talking about the games, like him and BJ Armstrong and Scotty and like all these cats, and just staying on the phone for the whole game. Like, we were commentating it. Like, we were phoning in the plays for Phil Jackson to run. Like, that was something that Michael, it didn't matter if you knew him, if you had his shoes, if you had a poster, if you played basketball, Michael Jordan connected with everyone. Because at some point you realize that all you were trying to do is become the Michael Jordan of your life, right?
Absolutely. And I think what athletes do for us, you know, the ones that we look up to and some people idolize, is they show you what's possible for your own life. And that's all we want in different areas, whether it's a teacher, whether it's your parents, you know, whether it's an athlete, whether it's just somebody that you know or you've heard about. You know, you can have mentors that are close to you. You can also have mentors that you don't know by looking at their life. And again, they show you what's possible for your own life. So, yeah, I love that. I love that. So you said something about, like, connecting right before. So now I think this is before your era a little bit, but I know you're a student of the game. And I look back and I wish I connected with this player, none other than Irving Magic Johnson. I wish I connected to Magic, and I didn't. I don't know why, because that's the kind of style that I love to this day, just like smooth operator kind of dude in Magic. But I did not like the Lakers back then. I was all about Dr. J and Mo Cheeks and the Sixers, and I was, like, passionate about it. So what are your thoughts on Magic Johnson's game, and where does he stand now? Did you go back and watch any of these Showtime Lakers, and then that the Celtics were out back then? And, I mean, it was some serious rivalries back then.
I mean, that was like true vintage basketball. And I think whether you're a fan of the new era basketball of today with Steph and LeBron and all those guys, or you were a fan of the Kobe era or the Michael era, you know, what Magic and Kareem and all those guys did was pave that way. Pave the way for, before Slam even came on the market, before Sports Illustrated could even get to the popularized kind of status. I mean, I can't even imagine the following that Magic and Kareem and Byron Scott had back in the day. Like, there's a new show on HBO chronicling that Laker team back in the day, and it's this dramatic, you know, kind of series that I'm interested in watching. But, you know, with, like, Jerry Buss and all these guys, and I mean, Magic was, from what I remember seeing in, like, these throwback videos and these vintage kind of games that I've watched against the Celtics, Magic was the truth. I mean, yeah, he might have not, like, dunked on you all the time or, you know, like, been a great three-point shooter, but he didn't need to be.
Look, he made you look stupid. I watched some of the videos. He made folks look stupid. The one where he's like this.
Oh my,
I still
gosh.
Ain't seen nobody do that modern day. Where he's taking it back and forth. You don't know whether he's throwing it to the left or to the right or behind him. Big time. Absolutely. We're up against the break again. Well, hold your thought. We're up against the break. It comes quick, y'all. This is the Give It Up podcast, and we will be right back.
Did you know untreated chlamydia and gonorrhea can make it so that you or your partner might not be able to become pregnant? Get tested today. Visit Allegheny County Health Department's Public Health Clinic for free and confidential walk-in HIV STD screenings at the Hill District location, 1908 Wiley Avenue. Call 412-578-8081 for more information.
Welcome back to Give It Up on UrbanMediaToday.com. My man, Matt Moclair, I interrupted his thought. We were talking about Irvin Magic Johnson, so I want you to finish up. Go ahead.
So, Coach, I when you said this, it really brought up a good a question that I had, is that because of your fandom of, let's say, Dr. J and Mo Cheeks and all those, how much did it take away from you investing in getting to know other great players? For instance, if you were a Michael Jordan fan, you didn't even spend a moment learning about the Detroit Pistons. Unless they were playing the Chicago Bulls in the playoffs, right? You didn't spend 1 minute learning about the Phoenix Suns, unless they had Charles Barkley and, you know, Danny Ainge and all those guys, unless they were playing them in the playoffs. How much of your fandom for one player or one team took away from your fandom for another team or another player?
To be honest, I think that's exactly what happened with, you know, the Magic Johnson situation. Cause I look back and I'm like, how is it possible that I didn't follow and love Magic Johnson? And the crazy part is, shout out to my coach, Mr. Rufus Brown, who our team was named the Rockettes because he was a fan of the Lakers. Our colors were purple and gold. I had the Magic Johnson purple and gold Converse high tops back in the day, rocked them. Loved them. I wish I knew where they were today. My favorite tennis shoes of all time. And I
still, You didn't play them.
Yeah, we played in the high top leather. No, they weren't canvas. They were high top leather.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson, purple and gold, Rockettes, Rufus Brown. I'm telling you. So I 100%. It took away from me learning a lot more about other players. Although I will say, and I had this as one of my questions, the Detroit Pistons with Isaiah and the microwave, Vinnie Johnson back in the day, I did like them too. Didn't study him as much, didn't study Isaiah as much, but when they weren't playing the Bulls, I was a fan of the Pistons. Not the Chauncey Billups Pistons for some reason. Not those Pistons. Not those ones, but the Isaiah Thomas Pistons I did like.
I mean, Isaiah was a little beast. That young man, I mean, I remember watching Hoop Dreams. Remember that movie?
Yes.
I watched that movie probably 101 times. And it was the same kind of story, you know, like with Isaiah coming out of Chicago and, you know, like, looking at his career and what he did as a undersized point guard with his feistiness and his ball handling and his leadership, regardless of what you want to think about the Detroit Pistons as a whole, Isaiah Thomas was the man.
He was the truth, right? He was the truth with Bill Laimbeer. We know Vinnie Johnson was on that team. I'm trying to think of some of them other players. John Sally. They were doing work.
Joe Dumars. I mean, those cats were a well-oiled machine. And you know what? I like the mental edge that they had on teams. I like the physicality. I like the way that they put the bad boy reputation on themselves because it made the game so much more interesting. So when they did play Michael early on in his career, it made it that much more interesting because you wanted to see how Michael rose. You wanted to see how Scotty would match up with their players, with John Sally. You wanted to see how the point guards would handle each other and the big men with Bill Cartwright and all those guys. You wanted to see it. That's what it was all about. Now, after the game was over, I could care less if the Detroit Pistons lost their way home to Auburn Hills, but during those 2 hours, 3 hour time gap where they played, I'm all in it.
entertainment. So, okay, so we touched on this a little bit. So you talked about Isaiah's ball handling, right? So what player, let's go through a couple of players. Let's start with Isaiah. What modern day player, if any, reminds you of Isaiah Thomas a little bit? Do you see, does anybody got a little Isaiah in him, whether it's like his leadership or ball handling, or what do you think?
So this is a really great topic, and I'm so glad you brought this up, Coach. I mean, I think the ability that Isaiah had really reminds me of what Chris Paul does with the ball. You know, like his ability to handle that kind of pressure, to run that offense, it's bar none, you know, and to limit the turnovers, I think. Chris Paul's so smart with the ball. He knows how to get players in position. You know, he knows how to make that space to get off a shot. I think Isaiah was the same way. He's quick. He has the leadership abilities. You know, when I look at the great ball handlers of the league, who I remember being one of the best when I was growing up, was white chocolate Jason Williams.
You took it right out of my mouth. When he went behind the back and then hit it off the elbow, let's go, white chocolate. And you know he was in Pittsburgh. You know he played in the Connie Hawkins Summer League because he had a girlfriend in Pittsburgh back in the day.
She's from Brentwood. And I'll never forget, he played in Kennard. We went up to Kennard and watched. And you know how Kennard, everybody that's listening to this knows the City League and knows, or, you know, like the city basketball and the courts and the leagues and everything. You have to be really careful how you come into the city and how you show out, right?
And listen, be honest, a white dude coming to Kennard, showing off and showing out is a phenomenon.
You better have a quick car to get out of Kennard if you're ready to do that. Because I remember Jay Will came to Kennard with like Pete Sauer and all those cats like Damon McGill and rolled up into Kennard and played and showed up these cats in Kennard. And I'll never forget, I thought to myself, my boys and I thought, we are about to see a full-out brawl. If Jay Will, if his name and his reputation didn't come with him, they would have crushed that dude and buried him under the court. They would have buried him right under the court. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. And what nobody really knows is Jay Will had bounce. He could get up. That's the thing that really doesn't show out with Jason Williams. But his ball handling skills, bar none.
Bar none. I got white chocolate Jason Williams in my Hall of Fame. I don't care what nobody says. And I'm going to tell you why. Like, to me, and I watch basketball for the aesthetics, right? I like the sweet pass. I like the sweet move. I like to see great plays. And who is making better plays than Jason Williams? Who is making the crowd go crazy more than Jason Williams? I feel like that dude is top 10 guards of all times, if not higher, in terms of crowd pleasability. I just made that word up.
I like that word. And I love your thoughts on it, because you're exactly right. And I think that's what allowed us to really see the potential of what you could do with a round basketball, right? And that's what gave us basketball players the passion to put on winter gloves and dribble up and down the court. That's what gave us the passion to put on those glasses that you can't see down below, but you just can look out and dribble with it. That's what gave the passion for us to dribble around garbage cans and dribble tennis balls around and stuff like that. Could we ever get handles like Jason Williams? Probably not, but we tried.
There it is. Shout out to Jay Will. Can we get you on the podcast?
Come on, man. Coach, I got one more thing. Do we have a break coming up?
No, we're good. Go, roll. Our break is not for a long time. We're good. Go.
So before we get into more of the NBA throwback, let's shift gears for a minute. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed back in the day, there was the NBA period of time that we grew up in, but then there was the local basketball in Western Pennsylvania that was thriving back in the day. Now, I don't follow Western Pennsylvania basketball as much as I did back in the day, but I don't feel like it was the way that it was back in the day that it is now. Back in the day, when we had players, you know, for in the City League, like Wayne Copeland, Courtney Wallace, Jeff Benson for Schenley. I mean, I remember Derek Suber at Schenley. You know, I remember Jeep Kelly coming up to our school and helping practice with Fred Skyrocky and those guys. You know, I also remember, you know, like Chris Kirkland at Stowe Rocks and little Monty Laramere. And, you know, like these guys that would go on and play at these big level schools. But I remember those guys like Pete Sauer from Shadyside, Damian McGill from Shadyside. I remember the throwbacks in the Western Pennsylvania basketball that left us with a touchable kind of player that maybe Michael Jordan or, you know, those guys back in the day couldn't get us. Mike Keyes from Woodland Hills. These kind of players. Do you remember that day, those days, Coach?
Listen, let me jump in on this because you mentioned every brother that ever hooped during your era. So I got to shout out my era of the 80s and 90s and all my people, big time people like, listen, Lydia Woods, Robert Morris. I'm going to mess somebody up. Monica Schatzman. She played at San Diego State. Let's go with, I can't miss none of my friends. They will eat me alive if I do this right now. Lisa Falloon played with Susan McConnell at Penn State. Let's go with Connie Hurt, 6'4 center at Pitt. Mary Bukovic, Kent State, D1 forward. I said, oh, Carlita Jones, All-American at Clarion University.
Oh, yeah.
I throw myself in there, IUP, Margo Hinton, and Tracy Christopher. I can't remember if I said her already. She played at Duke. Rest in peace. She passed away suddenly in 2017. She played at Duke. And the list, Tanya Garner played at Penn State also. The list goes on, and I'm missing a ton of Karen Hall, UNLV, Running Rebels. It just goes and goes and goes. Shout out to anybody that I missed because you guys know you're in my heart. But, yeah, listen, we would go to the courts, Mellon Park.
Oh, my gosh.
In the place, my neighborhood, Warrington Recreation Center, Turtle Creek League, Connie Hawkins League. We would go to the courts and beat dudes on a regular. On a regular. Brandon Fuss Cheatham used to play with us. This one, he was like in middle school or barely in high school. He would be like our fifth player, and we would just take people out and not leave the court.
Oh, and yeah. Brandon and I used to
know who they are that got beat on, too.
Coach, Brandon and I and my boy Rasan used to go up and work out with his dad at the field house with Archie and Sean. And I remember dribbling through like big chairs and cones with them wearing winter gloves.
Listen, you might have saw us back in the day because we were with his dad all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't know me then.
I mean, I remember sneaking into Trees Hall back in the day to play pickup games. I remember playing two on two with my boy Rasan and Jerry McCullough and Orlando Antigua up at the field house. The field house was the spot to be at. The field house, it was like indoor Cameron Stadium before indoor Cameron Stadium even existed. I remember watching the McDonald's game, the McDonald's slam dunk contest at the field house with Kobe and Corey Benjamin and all these cats, Lester Earl. I remember all these guys.
Yes.
I saw the program for it right here. I mean, I remember that's other than the NBA back in the day, basketball here in Western Pennsylvania, on any given Tuesday or Thursday night, you go up to OZ, you could at least see 5 to 6 either D1 or future D1 players. There was no doubt. And then you took it to the next level and go to Connie Hawkins in East Liberty. You went to Kennard. You know, you went out to North Park. You went out to, you know, Woods Run. You went to the North Side down at North Avenue. I mean, and you know what's funny, Coach, is that when I ride through the city now, I don't see that.
Desolate. It's desolate. It's, and I'm hoping it comes back a little bit, people coming out of COVID and people get back on these courts, because, you know, I had that Facebook Live for the whole first year of the pandemic. I was getting on every day, going to a different court, wondering where the people, where my people's at. Come on, old schoolers, get back on the court. I'm still trying to get y'all out there. But yeah, but it's not the same. I think a lot of people play, you know, AAU, and they're doing all this traveling, but, it, you know, which is semi-organized, but they're not like out in the streets getting that hood game that really gets your game right.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And then, you know, the best parts about those kind of things is, you know, when people came in from outside of the area and played, because you always knew the cats that came in from like Upper St. Clair or Peters Township or like somewhere in the burbs, you always knew those cats coming into the city, because they'd be like, where am I at?
Right? They look like a fish out of water.
Oh, it was so good. And, you know, I think that's what brings me back to like Slam Magazine is, you know, the back in the day basketball wasn't just Michael and Magic and Larry and Isaiah and all these. It was the Corey Benjamins. It was the Kevin Garnetts, the people that grew up playing ball that you never really heard about after high school, maybe after college. Like, those are the guys that fueled my youth, that fueled the ability to read through Slam Magazine from the first word on the first cover on the front cover to the last word on the back page, and know every single profile and every single player that came through that magazine. And that's what I will never, ever forget. And that's what I cherish to this day, that my friends and I still talk about. It's not the new age basketball. It's what put us on the map, what put our passion into play, what gave us the ability to stay at the gym until 10, 11, midnight, you know, each night. That's what really gives us the passion to continue on with this. I could care less about this weak dunk contest or these weak three-point shootouts. It's what we saw back in the day that really matters, the grassroots of basketball.
I love that. We're up against another break, which is awesome. And we're going to come back, wrap this thing up. We got about 10 minutes when we come back. And when we come back, we'll throw a couple questions out there. But we also got a little bit of trivia for each other. And we're going to see how that goes. See if he can stump me on the trivia. I'm pretty sure he can. We'll be right back. This is a Give It Up podcast.
The views and opinions expressed on podcast do not necessarily reflect on the official policy or position of Urban Media Today and Urban Media Today Radio. Any content provided by guests, sponsors, or advertisers are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Welcome back to Give It Up on UrbanMediaToday.com. My main man, Matt Moclair, is here. He is here in the house. Matt, we're going to wrap this thing up. We got about 10 minutes left. I'm trying to see what question to go to. I know. I've got to give you this question, because you were probably like, when you saw it, you're like, what's she talking about? All right, so this is a question that I got. Are you and I think I already know the answer, a James Otto or a Janet Jackson? And what I mean by that, James Otto has a song called "These Are the Good Old Days." And then Janet Jackson said, "What have you done for me lately?" So what I'm asking you, are you all about the throwback, the good old days, or are you about what's happening right now?
I'm a Janet Jackson kind of guy. Now, back in the day with 112 and, you know, the smooth sounds of all that R&B and that melodic, whatever she had going on with Escape and all that kind of stuff. And that music back in the day, I remember dances down at the Manchester Craftsman's Guild. And the lights go out, and it would just be another world of just R&B vibing. You throw a little bit of 112 with a little bit of Biggie on that, you could just wrap that day up for me.
You just took that. You took that to the next level. I think you was answering questions I didn't even ask, but I think that was better than anything I could have hoped for. I love that answer.
Okay. All right, what about you, Coach?
Listen, I don't even know. I love everything you said just now. I'm going to go with that. I'm going with that. Okay, so this is my other question. Then we're going to go right to the trivia.
Come on now.
So it's sort of related to the last question. Are you a GOAT? Meaning, do you believe there's a such thing as the greatest of all times in the NBA? Or are you a GOT? Meaning, you're the greatest of the time, whatever era you're in. So in other words, Michael Jordan would be the greatest of his era. Wilt Chamberlain would be the greatest of his era. And whoever you believe, I don't know, Kobe, LeBron, Kevin Durant are the greatest of this most recent era. Or do you believe overall it's just Mike? What are you, a GOAT or a GOT?
I'm probably leaning, and I've never heard that before, but I like the way that you put it. I'm more of a GOT.
Okay. Okay.
More of a GOT. How about you?
I'm a GOT too, because I think it's hard to compare eras.
Yeah, that's
it's
tough.
So hard, because when people say, if you take the 87, whoever, versus the 2022, whoever, who would win? Like, nobody knows.
That's exactly it. And because Michael Jordan is 6-for-6 in the finals, does that mean he's better than LeBron, who's been there 47 times and won, five times? I mean, like, it's just there's a lot of variables that go into the discussion. Now, the discussions are great because they'll always be who's the greatest of all time.
Right, right. But
for us personally, we're more GOTs.
We're GOTs. We're the GOT. Okay, let's go into this trivia. So you want to go, you go, I go, or you go all of yours, and then I go all of mine. What you want?
Let me go all of mine and all of yours.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, so, because we both have jerseys on that really represent people that we've really identified with in our basketball careers. Kobe Bryant, the late Kobe Bryant, had the privilege of wearing 24, number 8 in his professional career. And what number did he wear at Lower Merion?
Oh my God, I have the jersey. Lord, I have the jersey. I have his jersey. Oh God, Margo, what is it? I want to say 55, but I don't think that's it. I have the jersey. I'm about to go get the jersey.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You can't go get it.
Okay, not 50. Oh, I'm like trying to see. I'm looking into my brain, and my brain is, I don't know. I should know. That's disgraceful. I have his jersey. What is it?
So it's, and I know you know this, it's 32.
32? Oh my goodness. Where did I get 55?
That's all right. That's okay.
Shout out
that's
to my great friend Julie, who had a hip replacement surgery today, and she wore 55 at Gannon University. She's one of the greatest Gannon University basketball players of all time. So,
that's a shout out.
Replacement surgery today.
Ooh, that's rough, but good luck.
That's my favorite 55 right there.
Yeah, and we were talking about Jason Williams too. So that's his. That was his number back
there
in the day.
There you go. Let me off the hook. Let me off the hook.
So here we go. So, because Slam is such an iconic magazine, the fifth issue of Slam featured the dynamic duo of Tim Hardaway and Latrell Sprewell.
Oh.
Now, when you add the third trio to that, Chris Mellon, what was their nickname back in the day?
Oh, is it Run Tim? Run TMZ? What was it? Run.
No, you have to get the letter right.
Run. Wait. Tim Hardaway, Latrell Sprewell, and Chris Mullen. TM. What is it?
Run TMC.
C. I was right there. That was better than the 55. That was better than my 55.
That was pretty good.
All right, Run TMC. All right, okay. So mine, I think I went a little bit more difficult.
Go ahead.
I'm apologizing in advance. Okay, so this is my question for you. In the 2000s, who was the first player to record back-to-back 50-point games? And I'm going to give you a hint. He played for the Warriors. You say, okay, so it was, believe it or not, Anton Jameson.
Oh,
remember that, brother?
Oh, yeah, from North Carolina.
I forgot how good he was.
Oh, he was legit.
I totally forgot. So I looked that up. I was like, that's shocking.
Two back-to-back 50-point games. That's crazy.
And this is good. This will be good. So the first one was against the Seattle Supersonics. Okay. And the second, and they lost, right? So he scored 50 and they lost. And the second one was against Kobe's Lakers. And I think, I don't know if this was a first, but it was significant at the time. Kobe and Anton Jameson dropped 51 in the same game.
Oh, my gosh.
51 in the same game.
Yeah, and that must have been a ticket to hold on to.
Listen, and the Warriors won that when they beat Kobe's Lakers. All right, so here's my
second question. That's a good one.
This is my second question. What color commentator is the oldest, you're going to get this one right, and longest running in the, well, I don't know if he's the longest running. He's definitely the oldest in the NBA. And you get bonus points if you catch it, get his age. What'd you say?
Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown came to talk to me at Five Star Basketball Camp back in the day. I'll never forget it.
Wait, can I tell you? You guys listen carefully. Matt and myself have both met Hubie Brown. I met him at like a Nike coaches training camp, and we were in Ohio. I want to say we were in Cleveland. I can't remember where. I went with Jennifer Scott. Oh my God, I forgot. Jennifer Scott, All-American at Pitt. She would like really throw me under the bus that I didn't say her name. Jennifer Scott, one of my very best friends, played at Pitt, and her brother Kirk Bruce, Jennifer Bruce Scott, I should say, and her brother Kirk, he was her he was the head women's basketball coach, not her coach when she played at Pitt, but he was the head women's basketball coach there as well. So yes, we both met Hubie Brown, and that's awesome. And
fantastic.
Bonus, how old was he? How old is he today? He just did a game last week.
Is he like 201 years old?
Close, very close. 88 years old.
88 years old.
Hubie Brown is 88. And to be honest, him and Doris Burke are my two favorite commentators. That's if fantastic. I get Doris Burke on the game, I'm like, I know she's going to give it to us like it's supposed to be. I mean, she breaks it down.
Like it's real. Yeah. Coach, I love your questions. One more thing before we leave. I need you, because this is your show, I need you to wrap up of what basketball has meant throughout your years, what the game has given you, what the history of the game has done for your life, and sort of where it's taking you and how it's shaped your mindset going forward.
What I would say is basketball has given me everything, literally everything. I like get choked up thinking about it because, you know, just being a member of a team sport in general provides relationships that, you know, are forever, gives you that sense of purpose. It gives you a sense of commitment to something bigger than yourself. And it's also provided me with opportunities that I wouldn't otherwise have in terms of coaching young people, in terms of getting a scholarship. And, you know, right now with this degree I'm getting in social justice, my major, my goal is to really work with student athletes around social justice issues. So the most common thread in my entire life is basketball, and everything else is connected to it. There's nothing that I do really that hasn't had some roots in the game of basketball. So I am very grateful to the game of basketball. What about you? And then we're out of here. We got to wrap it up.
You know what? I always think about the journey in life and how, you know, basketball has shown me how to appreciate that journey. You know, the attention to details of things like establishing a work ethic. Basketball has given me my work ethic, how to put a goal up on the wall and how to work towards that goal. You and I both established some pretty high level goals, and we need those abilities to tap back into what we did as youths and did growing up with that game part of us, right? And I think the hours that we spend in the gym, the hours that we spent learning about the game, those are the things that we take into what we do today. You being such a phenomenal teacher, you know, you being a great daughter, you being a great official, you being a great student, it just goes hand in hand with what basketball's taught us. So I think that's right along the way. And I think that's a great way to end our show this week.
Absolutely, you guys. Thank you to my guests. We just do it, y'all. We just do it. My guest, Mr. Matt Moclair. Listen, this was a good one, y'all. Throwback on the NBA. This was a good one. Listen to this one twice. I think you'll find something great. Hey, this has been the Give It Up podcast on UrbanMediaToday.com.
Shout out to Kiki, Trevin, and Mr. Alan Lakin. Everybody, give it up and be blessed.
It's Give It Up with Margo Hinton on Urban Media Today Radio. Brought to you by Nice to Media Marketing and Promotions.